Hello, Bearers. Bearabella here. The Honeycast is excited to present the recording of Bearapalooza 2024. This episode features a panel discussing venture capital with Tekken from DAO Fi, Rodney from Hack VC, Boris from Tribe Capital, and Amir from Hypersphere. Moderated by Papa Bear. Enjoy!
Okay. BMBMBM, Bearers. For those of you who don't know me yet, I'm Papa the Bear. I'm known as the bear who draws the bears here at Bear Chain. I'm also MVP's intern, depending on who you talk to. And I have the privilege at Bear Chain of, doing this beautiful thing called raising money. And that means that I get to work with these spectacular value adders who are with me on the stage today. So for every single person who's on the stage here, they're deeply invested into both Bearchain itself as well as the Bearchain ecosystem. So if you're a builder in the audience here today, I'd highly suggest to speak with all of these fine folks after this panel because they personally have Papa the Bear's individual endorsement. So to kick this off, I'm going to have each of our beautiful value adders from left to right introduce themselves, and I'm going to have them give us a few pieces of data. First, who they are and a little bit about their background, then a short blurb on their fund, and then lastly, their AUM and their average check size. So without further ado.
I start off. Booga booga. How's everyone doing? Excited to be here. My name is Amir Al-Maimani. I'm a partner at Hypersphere. A bit about myself. Been in the crypto space for about 5 years now, 3 years at Hypersphere. Started off at Consensus in 2019. 2020 was doing venture work on behalf of the Tezos Foundation, so made the jump over there. And then joined Hypersphere in 2021. A bit about our fund, spun out of the Web3 Foundation in 2020. So first vehicle was very much a quasi-ecosystem fund for Dotsama. 2021, raised a second vehicle, chain agnostic, $60 million seed stage fund, which is where we're investing out of right now. And recently actually launched a liquid fund as well, which is about $110 million. And check size typically about 650K is a sweet spot. Total AUM across all three vehicles about 300 million. And yeah, excited to jam on Bearchain right now.
All right, my name is Boris Revson from Tribe Capital. Quick background in crypto, got started in 2017, personally investing. Before that, I was a founder. Now I'm a recovering founder. Managing director, Tribe. We've got two funds. We have a $400 million fund and a $100 million fund. So the average check size depends on which slot you fit in, from 500K to 2 million on the smaller fund, all the way up to 15-20 from our later stage fund. And I forget what else you asked, but vibes.
Hey, everybody. Great to see everyone here. I'm Rodney. I'm a partner at Hack VC. A bit about myself. Been in crypto since 2017. Also used to work with this dude, Naval Ravikant, who founded Angelist and started like a YC-backed health insurance company in the past life too. But yeah, I'm a partner at Hack VC. We do mostly like early stage infra stuff. I would say our fund size right now is like 420. And like average check size goes up to like 10 or something like that. But it's great to see everybody here and excited about Bearchain. I think it's going to be one of the most important projects in the space.
Hello, everyone. BMBM. My name is Tekken. I'm the founder of a fund called DAO 5. We're a relatively new fund. We've been around about 2 years. And it's about the 2-year anniversary of when I first got Bearapilled. And it's been an incredible ride ever since. We're a $125 million venture fund, mostly invest in crypto infrastructure, but really love a good meme, love good culture. And our check sizes range between roughly 250K to 2 or 3 million.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so my next question for all of these guys is for anybody in the audience who's ever had to raise a round before, okay? Fundraising is based around one core thing, which tends to be, other than the relationships, the personal relationships you build with your investment partners, a lot of the times VCs have a bad name for being driven by what we call FOMO, or the fear of missing out. This is essentially what causes a VC to, you know, really get turned on and attracted by a deal. And when there's a lot of FOMO surrounding a transaction, VC firms kind of can get into a frenzy and can get a little bit, you know, neurotic about things. The question that I have for each of the panelists is, when you're talking to a founder, when you're talking to a company, you know, what drives the most FOMO? What gets you as an individual investor most excited about participating in a round? We'll go the other way. We'll go Tekken and then back.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think venture capitalists can tend to be herd creatures, and FOMO is a function of like following social cues of other and realizing that you're not doing something that you think you should be doing. I really think the best deals are done when you kind of have your own conviction in something. You meet a founder that has a very clear, succinct vision of what they want to do. Not a dissimilar experience to first meeting Papa Bear over there. And that kind of energy can be contagious, and you realize right away that you're onto something big. I think that getting too caught up in FOMO or perception of like, you should be investing in X because other people are doing it, is a really quick way to losing money. You end up doing a lot of things that you actually don't have conviction in, and you just make the bets that you thought you were supposed to make. So yeah, the easy part in crypto is actually like being in for the long ride. This technology, this space, this asset class is very inevitable. The hard part is grappling with the emotions internally. So control that FOMO.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. I would add, like, the deals that I think are the best and the founders that I think are the best are the ones that get obsessed with the problem and not with the solution. You see a lot of people building protocols because it pushes the frontier technically. And I think sometimes that's great, but sometimes you're building a product for an audience that isn't just there yet. I think the best founders don't do things like, you know, FOMO into pivoting into AI during the crypto bear market. You know, they don't bounce between like ZK and, you know, Plasma or some other. Maybe they do. Maybe they found a unique insight that makes that the solution. But, you know, it's really the people that focus on how to serve customers that they have met in a certain category. And, you know, they work with them to build an optimal solution. And, you know, that's how you start the business instead of just, you know, finding what you think is the frontier and building like, you know, a ZK metaverse, like Bitcoin L3 or something, you know?
So if the question is how to build FOMO, I think the number one most important thing is controlling the message. At the end of the day, a lot of founders will go out there and hit up Telegram, hit up email, everyone they know at the same time with the same message. And then at the end of the day, people come back, they change the message. Some people hear one thing, some people hear something else. By controlling the message, controlling your timing, doing your homework in advance, understanding who the nodes of influence are. And I don't mean influencers on TikTok or Twitter. I mean people in this room that understand and can then validate the message to their friends and their friends and their friends. So number one, control the message and understand what that means for your specific protocol. I think that's by far the most important thing. If we think FOMO is a good idea, which sometimes it is.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's touched on some great points here. As Tekken said also, adopted conviction is really the fastest way to the poorhouse as a VC. And that's something that comes in cycles, obviously, because it's reflexive. You see that in a bear market where no one wants to deploy any money at all. In a bull, people start operating outside of their circle of competence, start investing in verticals that they have no true expertise in. So finding that balance, not allowing the market to actually dictate your deployment velocity, that's something that time and time again has proven to be the best way of acting as a VC and not falling victim to FOMO.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. So the funny thing about venture capital and is that even though, you know, it's a very FOMO-driven process a lot of the times, the biggest returns are always driven by the outliers, right? Everything's on a Pareto distribution. So one of the things that has caused all the fine people on this panel to be able to continue to raise funds and stay in the industry is because of the fact that they've been able to take some large outsized bets on deals that, you know, when they first came to them, really didn't look like something they should have been doing. However, the downside to that is every once in a while, a deal comes to you that looks iffy, and a year or two goes by, and eventually, you know, you realize you missed the next big thing. So the question I have for each of you, and we'll start from the left and go all the way back to the right, is what is your biggest fumble? What is the deal that hit your desk that you should have done, you had the experience to do, but you missed it? Why didn't you do it? And what was the deal? We can go right to left if you want, but I was going to go left to right.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Putting on the spot here. Biggest miss. probably over the past, this past bear market, passed on Dimension's seed. They're raising, I believe, 6.5 at 50 or 60. They're actually having a hard time closing the round as well. Ended up getting co-led by Stratos and Big Brain, as everyone knows at this point, trading at a 6 or 7 billion FTV. Reason for passing at the time, largely the narrative around the project was still being fleshed out. There is no real alignment with the Celestia ecosystem. So a lot of these added premiums come over time. Narrative of modular money wasn't very much at the, what very much wasn't the meta during the raise. So given the information that I had in the moment, that's how I'm able to sleep at night. And we also have to remember, sure, you can pass on 100, 200X, but if you just keep your ears to the streets, there are many more opportunities out there. So, yeah.
So the biggest miss was definitely Solana. One of the earlier rounds, got a message from Raj, sure, do a check if you want to. Took a meeting, was super impressed. Why didn't I do it? I was just afraid to bring it to the IC. I was a partner, et cetera, but crypto was a bad word. We were a generalist fund. It was just straight up fear and something that I've learned from, obviously. But at the end of the day, if you have a conviction, you feel like something can happen, obviously you have to push forward. Didn't do that. Huge miss, but big learning experience.
Yeah, for me, I think that my biggest miss was probably Chainlink. I used to be on 4chan a lot back in 2017, and I would see all the 4chan threads on Chainlink, but I thought their community was really annoying. and so I refused to dive deeper, and I just like absolutely hated them as a project for a long time. And then a lot of my port codes started to use them in like 2018, and I was like, oh shit, I feel like I missed it. But yeah, that was one of my biggest regrets. And then also like the Clayton seed round. Yeah.
It's okay. People say that the Chainlink community is the closest match to the early Bearchain community. So you may have missed it on 4chan, but once we started Ooga Booging and Discord, you came back and co-led the Series A. So
inshallah, brother.
Techie.
So my biggest screw up, bar none, is not immediately taking my $100 million fund and buying JPEGs of bears smoking weed. It haunts me to this day. I left a lot of money on the table. And I think I held it against the, I pattern matched with maybe some of the frothy NFT behavior of 2021. And I didn't see the true value that was there, but you know what? You can't get them all.
And just for anybody in the audience, I just like to reaffirm that we like the art, but they are solely JPEGs. If any of our regulator friends are in the audience, we like the art. Okay. So my next question is, each of you guys get a ton of pitches, right? 50 pitches a week, 100 pitches a week. But, you know, some of those deals you end up closing, but a lot of them, you know, were great founders. You know, obviously Raj from Solana knows how to build a layer one blockchain, but the deal didn't get across the line. So for each of you, starting from the left, going back, what's the number one piece of advice you would give a founder that's about to go out and start their fundraising process? There's about 300 ecosystem protocols building on top of Bearchain today. About 60 of those are Bear native. And the first kind of 15 or so have already gone out and closed their rounds. But that means there's a whole lot of Bear ecosystem projects that are about to hit the market. What's your number one piece of advice for those founders before they come in and pitch your firm?
I think in terms of generalized advice that makes sense, try to get as far as you can before you need outside money. Obviously, the more you have to show, the more leverage you have in raising money. Definitely speak to multiple folks, but don't scorch the earth going to every single investor. And like at a certain point, you'll get enough information of what your product is worth at this period of time. And you should just like don't draw fundraising out. There are some founders who are expert fundraisers and often aren't the best builders. I think you want to do it because it's a necessity, not because you enjoy fundraising and going through the whole motion. But the good news is the current climate we're in, everything is in your favor. It's a good time to raise money. People are FOMOing. So not to shoot myself in the foot, but enjoy.
Yeah. I guess that's really good advice. But I would add, basically, like your job as a founder, you know, you started this cryptography company, you launched it on Ethereum. You know, the frontier is going to keep changing. You found one, you're building towards that. That's great. But your job is to, like, you know, reduce your cost of equity as a founder, you know, try to, like, give up as little as you can for as much as you can in terms of resources to continue building, and in terms of, like, chasing the frontier of, you know, innovation in your category, or, like, securing your moat. And in terms of fundraising itself, you know, I've seen a lot of good founders line up business deals at the same time as fundraising deals. And so, you know, you do BD at the same time as you do fundraising. You tell the BD side that you're lining up capital, tell, like, the fundraising side that you're lining up BD. You know, it really helps the chicken and egg problem to do both at the same time, I think, more than it hurts. So, yeah, I think those would be my pieces of advice.
I think both of those are really good points. I would just say, think it through. You should be able to visualize your entire fundraise from beginning to end before you start. And if you can't, those are gaps that VCs or investors will 100% identify, and you're going to have to answer tough questions on the spot. And so if you can start from the beginning, put on your VC hat. All of you guys obviously know a bunch of investors. Think it through to the end. What are the questions? What are the materials? What's the structure? You don't have to tell people that up front. Obviously, there's some gamesmanship in the process, but make sure that you can visualize the questions, the people, the process. I see so many folks just getting out there. They feel like it's time. Visualized it. That's the vibe you want to put out. But it's not fine if you're just putting things together and you're trying to do things too quickly. You'll fail even in this market to get it together, because everyone wants to pass on something. Not everyone wants to just say yes to everything. So think it through. That's all I would say.
Yeah, great points by everybody. One thing I guess I will add at this point is you also have to remember it's a two-way relationship. So the same way that your funds are, these funds are assessing you, you should also be making sure you're bringing the right partners on board, because the relationship doesn't end with them sending you money. That's a partnership for 3, 4, 5 years. And you want to have folks that are truly aligned with what you're building, not just simply there to be an unopinionated people on your cap table, because that's not value add at all.
And that last point really resonates. I think if there's two things about all of Barrachain's previous fundraisers, as a lot of these fine folks know, one of them is we run a very tight process. We know which funds we want to meet, in what order we want to meet them, and we block off a week or two at a time. We sit in a room and we meet with every fund back to back to back to back. I'd highly recommend anybody in the ecosystem to do the exact same thing. And if you're having a difficulty getting outreach to some certain VC or a partner at a certain fund, anybody on the core Barrachain team can help you get in touch with pretty well anybody in crypto venture capital at this point. And the second thing is, you know, we've got a lot of respect and deep personal relationships with a lot of these guys. And it's built upon one rule that Smokey and I both have, which is no assholes. So building on that last point, you know, we're building an L1 for 10 years and for as long as this, you know, space persists. It would be really hard if somebody had a huge bag that we didn't like. So we highly suggest picking partners that you actually could go out and have a meal with or have over to your home, because it just makes life a hell of a lot easier. But building on that point, when somebody's putting together a round, and each and every person on this panel has led rounds before, it's not just your fund that eats the entire round most of the time, right? VCs have to work together and decide which partners they want to work with on an individual deal that aren't inside their own firm, but, you know, you'll work with each other on this panel. So, you know, this panel is called Value Addoors. So the question that I have for you is, firstly, when you're advising a deal that you're leading on round construction, what do you look for? What questions would you suggest they ask? What features would you suggest that your portfolio companies look for in building out a round that you're participating in? And secondarily, kind of not just the composition, but what would you say if you were advocating for your allocation in a transaction that was contested, what would you say that your fund's secret sauce is, or you as an individual partner's secret sauce is? We'll go the other way.
Start in the middle this time, or what?
Should I start?
So I guess to the last point, our secret sauce, and I think this is something that a lot of people should pay attention to when they're being approached by potential investors, having a strong sense of, okay, how can I best leverage this partner in my project's future? So one way of achieving that is looking at their existing portfolio. Are there synergies within their existing portfolio that are complementary to what you're building? That's something that's typically overlooked, but when we approach portfolio construction, that's something we place a huge emphasis on.
We don't want our each of our porcos to be living on an island. We want to see folks working together. We want to be promoting that collaboration, that business development. So that's definitely something that's worth consideration during this process. And then as far as just other areas of support for us, we like to see a lot of interplay between our vehicles, specifically our liquid fund, specifically with teams building in the DeFi space. Liquidity is something that can be expensive in a PvP environment. So ways in which we can provide support there, we certainly do. And yeah, so.
Our secret sauce. Interesting. I think at the end of the day, what we think our secret sauce internally is not always how we're viewed externally. So Tribe Capital is what we call a quantitative firm. We do a lot of data work. We don't talk about that with people. It's boring. And oftentimes the data work that we do is just behind the scenes. And so when we talk to founders, like our actual secret sauce is that we're going to be active, engaged, and we're going to be with you from the beginning to the end, no matter what. Every single protocol, maybe except Barrachain, has had a really tough time. I mean, the last 2 years have been super brutal. And I think you can look back the last 2 years and see who's actually stuck it out with their founders and who has not. And at the end of the day, what I look for is, will I be proud to stick by this founder if they are having a tough time? That's the most important thing to me. And I was talking to Papa and the other guys, you know, in the behind the scenes here. And for me, what's most important is, do our worldviews align in one very important place, which is a sense of justice and fairness on the both counterparties? At the end of the day, if we have a disagreement, we have a problem, will we be able to find a middle ground? And will I feel comfortable introducing you to my friends and my network and working with you for 2, 3, 4, 5 years? That's what I look for. That's my number one thing when I evaluate a founder. Okay, so that I think is our secret sauce. We're really good at that.
Yeah, it's all great. For our side, I think a big thing that we look for is also alignment. You know, alignment is really big. Alignment and conviction on a specific problem set. You know, and the partnership that you build when you invest in somebody is like, you know, a home to build on top of within like a specific category or problem that you're both passionate about. And in terms of our specific, you know, value add or secret sauce, I think we have an incredible research team and also great vibes. So if you're looking for one of the two, we could probably help with either or both.
You know, a fun story about Rodney is, you know, we met Rodney on, I think it was a Friday afternoon. And Rodney wanted to diligence Barrachain, and we said, yeah, that's no worries. And for anybody who knows us, we all work in person in downtown Toronto. And Rodney was in New York at the time, and within 12 hours, Rodney had gotten on a plane, flown to Toronto, and met us in a chicken shop. So, you know, that's definitely, and that night, we went to the club, and I didn't see my co-founders until 6 a.m. the next day. So, you know, that's the vibes that you get with HackVC.
Yeah, some of my favorite Barrachain lore. Tekken has a few hieroglyphs too that are pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah, it's a good question. Finding a secret sauce can be very tough in an environment where there's so many projects, there's so many funds. So there's a lot of noise. The recipes can be pretty bland and similar over time. But I really don't know what ours is. Like, I just think the philosophy is, find some gap or something that others aren't doing and then fill that for your portfolio companies. So for instance, I don't know how many founders are, is that me? Okay. I love it. I don't know how many VCs are willing to tattoo a portfolio company logo on their body. That is a hole in the market that I was willing to fill.
For anybody who doesn't know, there's a contractual agreement between the Barrachain Foundation and DAO 5 that at a certain return threshold, our darling techie has to get an original bong bear tattooed somewhere of his choosing on his body. So as the bear who draws the bears, that has a touching place in my heart. So, you know, if you ever have any question of if the folks on this panel, you know, won't go the extra mile for you, you know, they'll literally get your bear smoking weed tattooed on their body. So, you know, these are the type of partners that you want to work with when building your companies. My next question for all of you is, you know, anybody who's been in crypto long enough, we have been, every person on this panel has been, it's a game of cycles, right? We've got these big bulls where deals get done really quickly. And then we have these long bears where it feels like we're never going to get out of them. And it's really difficult to build. So the question that I have for each of you guys is, how do you advise your founders to operate in a bear? And how does that change when the market flips and they're operating in a bull? And as an extra little bit of color, it would be helpful if you guys could articulate how your mindset as a capital allocator, as somebody who also has to go to LPs and raise money yourself and deploy it, how does your mindset change when markets are up versus when markets are down?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll just start from this side. I think, first off, it's very similar. The struggles as a founder or a capital allocator are similar when a bull and a bear. I think when times are tough, money contracts, whether that's coming from your LPs or coming from investors in your project, you have to just like channel that inner survivalist, be resourceful, make things stretch as long as you can, optimize or maybe like calibrate your mental model, assuming things are going to be bad for a long time. And then when the tides start to turn, be willing to ditch those ideas and kind of open up. But it's just that kind of like mental malleoplasticity that you need to change mindsets.
Yeah, I think that during bear markets, as a VC, it's hard to raise because your LPs are all embarrassed that they, you know, got into crypto and don't think it's a good opportunity anymore. You know, they just want to go pursue other industries. And I think it's a good time to deploy, but deploying is uncomfortable because, you know, your comp isn't even 10x up, compared to the seed round that you're reviewing. There's not enough, you know, demand to like fill out a round. So you might have to do it yourself. It requires a lot more conviction. Yeah. And then during the bull markets, of course, it's easy to raise, but it's incredibly hard to deploy. You know, some of our peers are really good at deploying during bull markets. But I can't stress how challenging that stuff is, you know. Yeah, lots of people get hurt by that stuff. So yeah, VC is super chill sometimes, but also like super difficult sometimes too. That's how I put it.
I think during bear markets, LPs are rewarded for doing things that are the same. So the safe bet, the big platform. And during bull markets, LPs are rewarded by their peers, by their bosses, for taking asymmetric risks. And so you kind of have this lagging indicator now where a lot of LPs are going to wake up and say, hey, all of a sudden I'm going to be rewarded for doing crypto once more. But for the last 2 years, the safe bet was either don't do venture, do private credit, do something else. And so you just have to understand what part of the cycle you're in. And I'll admit, even for Tribe, when we raised through the bear market, sometimes we had to struggle to explain to folks why in just a year and a half they'd be back on the grind, back asking for allocations. And so I would say the same thing to founders. You have to hold two things in your head at the same time. One is your external confidence in the future. And the other is a realism grounded in understanding where you are in the market cycle and planning for the time to strike, which obviously is going to change over time. And it's very hard for people to think over longer terms. So you just have to do that thinking for them and show them how things have happened in the past, how the cycles have turned. And sometimes it might just take longer and you just have to persist. And that survivalist instinct, I think, is exactly the right term.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has basically touched on all the key points at this point. So as far as survival itself, that's something we spend quite a bit of time with our portcos, especially during this bear market. Obviously, deployment velocity was much slower. But it's important to also be cognizant of that in a bull market as well. You don't want to allow the market to dictate your speed and the rate at which you're willing to actually contribute, because at the end of the day, you end up throwing your entire process out the window. And it's easier said than done. Like, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And I think that goes with founders as well. Sometimes when you raise that huge round, if anything, that can be even more dangerous for you because you're now sitting on $100 million, $200 million, and you feel like you need to spend it. Next thing you know, bear market comes around, you haven't adjusted accordingly, and your treasury is now running dry. Next thing you know, you have to do layoff after layoff, and then that could eventually be the end of your project. So maintaining steady state, obviously easier said than done, but that's something everyone should try to optimize for, both on the operator side as well as the investor side, in order to go from one cycle to the next to the next. That's how people survive.
Beautiful. Well, that's time, folks. I'd like to thank all the fine folks on this stage. If you're an ecosystem project in the audience, please come talk to one of these fine, beautiful people. I assure you they're among the best in the business. And if you're willing to invest in anonymous bear smoking weed blockchain, they're most definitely willing to give you a shot. So thank you to all the folks on the stage.
Google.
Thanks for tuning in. The next app features a panel discussing Modularity with Nick White from Celestia, Sandeep from Polygon, and John Cole from Hyperlane. See you in the next one.